Well, hey, so good to have you all here with us as we are jumping into week four of this Reimagine Tomorrow series. We haven't had a chance to meet yet. My name is Chris, one of the pastors here at Crosspoint. And in this series, we've been saying all along that it's kind of like God just hit this giant reset button. And everything came to a screeching halt, and now tomorrow it just stands as this blank canvas that we all get to just begin to paint a new picture of what it can be. And so this is really a time to rebuild. It's a like Mark said, it's a time to re-architect, a time to dream a little bit differently, and really a time to reimagine what tomorrow can look like. And so as we sit here today, as you sit at home right now, I want to ask you a question. I want you to really begin to dig into this. So I want to ask a question, and I need you to be honest with yourself. If you could point to just one thing in your life, just one thing that you have said at any point in your life has held you back, or maybe even currently is maybe holding you back from becoming something more, becoming something different, what would you say that one thing is? Like if you were to just be really honest right now and dig in just a little bit deeper and begin to ask yourself that question, begin to evaluate, what was that one thing? What would you label it? Is it your upbringing? Maybe some wounds from the past, maybe past relationships that you got burned on, or maybe is it your skin color? Is it a lack of empathy? Is it a lack of motivation? You're just not sure that you even know where to go, this unclear direction. Like, if you actually paused, you'd probably be able to point to something that at some point has maybe held you back or is even currently holding you back. You see, we all have something, don't we? And if we're honest, we might be able to admit that maybe that thing has a little bit changed the direction and the path of where our life is going or where our life is headed. You see, every single one of us has something that we could put on the list. But there's a group of people that I think oftentimes we look at or we see and we think, well, you know, I have these things, but they just, that doesn't apply to them. They don't have anything. They really don't have any struggles. They don't have any weaknesses. Like they wouldn't understand. Take Bruce Wayne, for example. Which I'm not sure if we would all agree on this, but this is my version of Bruce Wayne right here. So this is my Batman. It's the Christian Bale version of Batman. And I don't know if you guys would all agree with that, but personally, maybe it's recency bias. I don't know. But maybe some of you would say this is your Batman. Any one of these. Thank you. That was good. I like that. Any one of these guys. I mean, I don't know if you're maybe a 90s guy all the way back to the 40s. Batman has been around for a while. And I think we would all agree when we look at Batman, when we look at Bruce Wayne, we think he's got it all. I mean, he's got it all in front of him. I mean, son of a billionaire. This guy's crazy rich. He's handsome. He's intelligent. He's got all of the opportunity in the world right in front of him. But if we look at Bruce Wayne's life, if we look at the reality of his life, there is a weakness. There is a struggle. You see, the thing that held him back, maybe his kryptonite, it was this psychological trauma that he had as a child. And it really held him back. And so it doesn't matter who you are. We all have something. There's something in our life that we would label as our struggle. And now, you know what's fascinating, I think, about superheroes? Bruce Wayne, for example. You know, there's just something about all superheroes that we're drawn to. Whether you're one of those kids, maybe you had all of the action figures. And let's be really clear, these were not dolls, okay? These were not dolls. These were action figures. There's a clear difference, and everyone knows that. But even maybe you're not a superhero person, I'm going to be honest right now. The last superhero movie I watched was that Batman one. So that's why he's my favorite, because that's the last one that I could think of. But for me, I'm not really a superhero guy, but I'm still drawn to the idea of a superhero. Because there's something in us that's drawn to the stories of a superhero. There's something in us that connects us. And the question is, what is it? Why? You see, I believe that it's because what we're really looking for in these superheroes is really the life of Jesus. See, whether we realize it or not, we are looking for Jesus in the characteristics of these superheroes. For example, they're serving others. They're serving the weak at any cost. Jesus himself gave his life to serve others. That's a signature move that he made. There is no other God, there's no other religion that can claim to make that same move. You see, movies like Batman, they intrigue us because the myth of superheroes, it's been written on our hearts by God to really point us to Jesus, because I really believe that Jesus, he's the ultimate superhero. He's who we're really claiming to try and be more and more like. Now, I don't know what your version of Jesus looks like. Remember a couple weeks back, Kurt actually shared a few different versions of Jesus, and I got a little creeped out by a couple of them, so I thought, let's bring them back, because maybe some of you did too. So here's a couple different versions of Jesus that we kind of picture as what Jesus can be. There's, for example, there's Jesus holding a gun. I don't know why. I have no idea why. I don't understand it. It seems really weird because that child looks very small, and why is he holding? It creeps me out, quite honestly. It just does. So the second one, this is bulimic Jesus. If you remember, Kurt was talking about bulimic Jesus. His cheeks are a little sunken. Like, you got to get this guy a cheeseburger. Like, he's missed a few meals. We need to help him out. I'm not entirely sure about that one either. There's spooky Jesus, if you look closely, he is literally holding a heart. Like, why? What? There's nothing about that makes me think, I want to be friends with that guy. That actually just creeps me out quite a bit. There's a couple other ones, though, I want to throw up there, because this next one, this was on the Sunday school classroom wall of the Sunday school class I grew up in, right? I mean, that's like classic picture of Jesus, right? Maybe your grandparents had this picture up. Here's the thing. He's got like some blondish hair going on. You look closely, his eyes are looking a little blue. He's got a little Norwegian look about him. And Jesus was not born in Norway. Let's throw it out there. That's probably not what Jesus looked like. But again, that's kind of a classic look. And then there's Buddy Jesus, right? We all know Buddy Jesus. He's like, hey, you know, you do you, man. Like, you're good. Like, I got you. I'm your buddy. But here's the thing. I think Jesus is a part of a little bit of all those, except for the gun one. That one creeps me out a little bit. I don't know. But what Jesus really is he's all powerful. And we see it again and again and again in the writers of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the guys that were the authorized biographers. They walked with Jesus. What we see is that Jesus, he holds all of the power. In Ephesians 4, Paul, one of the writers of the New Testament, he actually writes that Jesus is far above all rule and authority and power and dominion and above every name that is named, not only in this age, no, Paul writes, but also in the ones to come. You see, that's Jesus. And there's this crazy scene in the Bible where Jesus, he's walking with his disciples. They're actually heading up to Jerusalem, and he's with his guys. And these guys, they've been with Jesus for a little while. They've seen him do miracles. They've seen his power at work. They knew who Jesus was. And they're thinking that they're walking into the city of Jerusalem to lay the smack down. They think, like, this is the moment right here. Like, Jesus, he's got all of his guys. Like, his fame, his authority, it's growing, it's rising. People are hearing about him. People are following him everywhere. And they think, you know what? We are about to walk into Jerusalem and own this place. Like, they are pumped. They really think this is the moment right here that Jesus is going to take his power, his authority. He's going to throw the Romans out, and this is it. He's going to establish his kingdom. And so two of the guys, they do this really, like, honestly, it's a punk move. It's a punk move, and you just don't do this kind of thing. You see, here's what they did. They sent their mom in to go and ask for a promotion. And let's be honest, like, never a good idea, right? I mean, I'm not a boss. I don't have, like, people that I'm hiring. But if I get an email from somebody's mom, that person immediately, right? I mean, what are you going to do? You crumple that name up, and they go in the trash can, right? Like, are you kidding me? Your mom's sending an email. Your mom's going to talk to Jesus to ask for a promotion. Like, just don't do that. That's just a bad idea. But back to the story. Here's how it goes down. All right. So it says, then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to her, he said, what do you wish? And she said, grant that these two sons of mine may sit one on your right and one on your left in your kingdom. Like, I want one of them to be the vice president, and I want one of them to be the third person. There's the president, and then there's the vice president. No one has any idea who's third in charge. I'm just going to be honest. If you were a history teacher, we probably should have gone over that, because that's what she's asking for. Like, third in charge, first, second, third. No one knows who that is, but that's what she wants. She wants them to be second and third in command. And Jesus says, he's like, listen, you do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they said to him, the son said, they said, we are able. I mean, these guys, they were named the sons of thunder. This is James and John. The sons of thunder. Like, they're like, look, Jesus, we've been working out, man. Like, we are ready. We've got this. Yeah, we can take this. We can drink the cup. Like, we are ready. And so Jesus, again, he says to them, he says, you will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left, it's not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared for by my Father. Jesus is like, you don't know what you're asking for, guys. You have no idea what you're really asking for in this moment. And do you remember where this scene is taking place? You know, they're heading into Jerusalem. It's on their way, and Jesus is about to use his power. He's about to use all of his power. But he's not walking into Jerusalem. He's not riding into Jerusalem to suppress people. No, he's going into Jerusalem in this moment to use all of his power that he has to serve at any cost. And really, it leads to even his own death. In just a matter of days, Jesus would be hanging on a cross. And there would be a position on his right and a position on his left. There were going to be other crosses. But the disciples right here in this moment, they totally miss it. They thought that Jesus was being like the super villain in the story. They're like, why are you suppressing this? Like, we just want to be a part of it with you. And so Jesus, he calls a timeout. He calls a timeout because he's looking at these guys and they just don't understand it. The other disciples in the moment, in this moment right here, the other disciples, they're looking at the two, at James and John, and they are pissed. And it's not like mad, like, oh, geez, guys, like, how could you be so arrogant? Like, I can't believe that you would ever do that. I'm so disappointed in you. No, no, no. The other 10, they are pissed because they didn't think of it first. Because they weren't like, oh, what? You beat us to the punch. Like, why didn't we think to ask Jesus about that? And so Jesus, he's like, he's got to call a timeout in this moment. He's like, he brings the guys together. He brings them all in, and it says this, it says, and when the 10, they heard it, they were greatly displeased. They were pissed with the other two brothers. But Jesus, he calls them together to himself, and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them. And those who are great, they exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. I think the last line in that, the last line that Jesus says right there, it's one of the most radical things that's ever been spoken. You see, the one with all of the power, the one with all of the power, the one with all of the might, the one that has been doing miracle after miracle, turning water into wine, healing lepers, raising people from the dead, the one with all of the power in this moment, he says to these guys, he's like, hey, I did not come so that you could serve me. No, no, I came to serve you. I came to use all of my power to serve you at any cost, even to the point of my death. And that is the signature move of Jesus. And then here's what's incredible, because we can't miss this in the passage. We oftentimes just kind of skip over this, but Jesus, he doesn't slam them. He doesn't get mad at them. He doesn't get angry with them for their desire to be like him. He doesn't. He actually affirms it. And he tells us how to actually do it. Let's go back. Let's read it again. This is what Jesus says. He says, "Whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave." You see, there's this incredible truth right here in the midst of this. Not only is Jesus the one who came to serve, but he invites us to serve too. To be the givers of hope, to be the givers of power, to be the ones that are bringing about encouragement and light in this world. Which quick note on this, if you missed last weekend's conversation with Kurt and with Mark, I really want to strongly encourage you to go back and check it out, because it was something that I think we all needed to hear, but even more so, it was something that we all needed to begin to take some action steps towards. I hope maybe you've even started it. Maybe you've started a conversation this week with someone that you've never had a conversation with. I really hope that we all begin to recognize that we have an opportunity to bring about change in our corner of the world, whether it be in our office or in our neighborhood, on our cul-de-sac, in our family. Because what I'm learning, what I'm beginning to understand is that racism is generational. And it just gets passed down, and sometimes more is caught than is actually taught. Maybe it's not even something that they heard, but it's something that they saw. And so let's stop it right in our families. You see, I think the goal and the question that we should all be asking based out of last week's conversation is how can we be others first? How can we be people that begin to think outside of me first, but begin to think, how can I put someone else first? Before me, because it's who Jesus was. You see, we see instances of this all throughout the authorized biographers of Jesus' life. When they're putting together these notes and these letters, they're writing down all these moments where Jesus truly was others first. And so how can we put this into practice in our own lives? How can we maybe even begin to change the view that it's all about me and mine and ours, but really begin to see that it's not really about us at all? So how can we be others first? Personally, Hannah and I have begun to have some intentional conversations on how to talk to our daughter Collins about race, even from a really young age. How she can be an ally for the broken, for the hurting people in the world, for the suppressed people in the world. Because what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, what I'm learning is it is generational. So we want to stop it in our family. See, people, they are watching us. And it's up to us to champion the rights of all people. Kurt said it last week. I want to make sure you hear it again. You see, now is not the time to be non-racist. Now is the time to be vocally anti-racist. And that really starts with us. But back to the story of Jesus. You see, what's so great about the way that he approaches these guys in this moment? He approaches leadership in a way that oftentimes we don't really approach it. And he's really clear on how to do it. He uses just three words. He says to be a servant of all. Now that's easy to say, but in reality, it's actually way more difficult to do. You see, the application of that is honestly, it's really hard. At least for me, it's really hard to be a servant of all, because practicing that, it means I have to show my weakness. It means I have to open up the curtain and show the struggle. You see, most of us, we spend so much of our lives just trying to cover up our weaknesses. But the Apostle Paul, he gives us a very different picture of this in 2 Corinthians. And this is Paul, who got into the whole faith game a little bit late. He got into the whole following Jesus, this relationship a little late in the game. And now he's in and he's like, hey guys, in case you wonder how weakness can be used, here's what Jesus said to me. This is what Paul said. Jesus said this to me. He says this. He says, my grace, it's sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Not my power is made perfect in strength. But my power, it's made perfect in weakness. Have you ever disqualified yourself from being able to know Jesus a little more clearly, a little more fully because of a weakness in your life? Because of a struggle that you've had? Do you right now in your life feel like maybe you're disqualified from a life of walking with Jesus because of your weakness? Listen, I'm telling you, that is the only reason that you are qualified. And thankfully, God, He loves us so much. He gives us tons of opportunities to practice this. He gives, personally, for me, one of the places that I get to practice my weaknesses is in my marriage. And let me be real with you guys today. I haven't really been the nicest guy through the last 3.5-4 months. Honestly, my wife went to the point of telling me this about 4 weeks ago. You guys think Hannah might just be this sweet, kind, never say anything mean. No. She lit into me the other day. And she said, "Chris, you've been a real jackass the last several weeks." I thought, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I had no idea because I had these blinders up. Guys, we do this, right? I mean, until someone says it right in our face, we don't really get subtlety too well. And you know, personally, I'm extroverted. I love being around people. I thrive off of it. And for you to tell me that I was going to be confined to my house for the next 4 months, and not my house, because I'm actually living at our in-laws' house because we're building a new house in Westfield for the new Crosspoint Westfield campus. And so I'm living at my in-laws' house for the next 4 months. We're going to be quarantined together. The only time I'm going to interact with other people is through a Zoom window. Throw out the idea of ever going to a restaurant anytime soon. Don't even think about traveling again, Chris. Like, that's gone. I wasn't the most pleasant person to be around, and Hannah told me that. And at times, I wanted to just explain it all away. Like, I just wanted to be like, well, you know, it's just who I am. I mean, this is my personality. Like, it's just, I mean, I can't change it. You have no idea. You should see what my dad's like. You should see what my grandfather was like. I mean, right, guys? Isn't that what we do? Guys in the room, maybe you're sitting at home watching on the couch. Maybe you're listening while you're mowing the lawn. Have you ever felt that? Have you ever believed that about yourself? Maybe you've even said it before. Said it to someone that you lead or someone that you're in a relationship with. Maybe said it to your spouse or to one of your kids. And ladies, you know, this does apply to you, but have you ever thought that? Like, it's just who I am and I'm not changing. I can't change. Because I can pretty well guarantee that when you say that, all you're doing is just pushing that person further and further away. That coworker, that employee, that spouse, that child of yours. You see, I believe that Jesus, He has so much more for us in these moments. In these moments of struggle, in these moments of weakness. But really what it requires is it requires a little bit of us. It requires us to lean in. It requires us to dig a little bit deeper and begin to maybe actually express our feelings and figure out what's going on. And for me, as I began to dig a little bit deeper on this, what I started to realize is, you see, many of you know that when I was hired here at Crosspoint, it was for the goal of launching our second campus and that is going to be in Westfield. And for me, over the last, I don't know, probably since last fall, really, all that I've been working on, all that I've been working for is towards this Crosspoint Westfield campus, working on connections in the community and meetings with people and building a launch team and figuring out what it looks like to be a campus pastor. And for me, it's what I've been just focusing on, just completely focused on this one thing. And then when this whole thing came to a screeching halt in March, it was like there's this piece of me that was just pulled from my chest because I started to realize I have no idea when that's going to happen again. And I started to get down. I was disappointed. I was frustrated. I was just a jerk at times. I mean, I was talking to people in a way that I would never want to talk to people. I was interacting with people that was just, it wasn't like me because I was bitter. I just wasn't a very fun person to be around. But once I began to recognize it, once I began to call it out, began to share it with other people around me, began to talk about it with others, you know, I began to see that there's a different story we can write about this. Because here's the thing. God is still moving. God is still moving right here at Crosspoint Fishers. God is still moving in the Crosspoint Westfield campus. God is moving in the city of Westfield. He's moving in our launch team that is still growing, even when we have no idea when this is going to be happening. It could be 6 months down the road. It could be a year down the road. But God is still moving in the midst. And I came across this quote these last couple weeks from a guy. His name's Viktor Frankl. And maybe you've heard of him before. Maybe you haven't. If you haven't, Viktor Frankl was an Austrian neurologist and psychologist. He actually survived the Holocaust. He was in Auschwitz, actually, for a period of time. And he went on to write about his experiences in a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And I want to preface this and say, my experience in COVID-19, your experience in COVID-19, your greatest struggle, whatever it may be, I don't know what it is, but I'm not trying to compare my experience of COVID-19 versus his experience. But I also want you to know our goal isn't to compare. You see, because we're all experiencing different things. We're all experiencing losses in a different way. We're all experiencing the effects on us each differently. And so here's what Frankl says. He says, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. And so what are you doing to change yourself? How are you leaning into your struggle? How are you leaning into your weaknesses? How are you beginning to see growth right now? How are you leaning more on Jesus in your life? Paul is one of my favorite writers in the New Testament. He's so honest. He's so raw at times. And we actually looked at this verse earlier, but I want to read it in the Message version. Because when I read it in the Message, I began to realize just how true this really is. This is what Paul has to say. He says this again. My grace is enough. Just let this soak over you for a moment. My grace is enough. It is all that you need. My strength that comes into its own in your weakness. When I read that, I'm like, all right, great, because I've got weakness, obviously, and this seems to be like a good thing, right? Like, according to this, like, now I'm still way in over my head. I'm sure all of us have felt that at times, but that's just the truth. It's real. If you're following Jesus, if you're chasing after a dream at times, you're going to feel like you are in over, way over your head. But here's the thing. Your qualification, it's not your strength. Your qualification, it is your weakness. It is not your strength. You are qualified because of your weakness. Jim Collins, he wrote a book called Good to Great. Maybe you've heard of it before. And he set out with this goal to determine the characteristics of men and women who take these great these good organizations and turn them into something that truly is great. And he's began to ask the question, what are the traits? What are the things that they share in common? And what he found is amazing. Because what he discovered is that it wasn't their strengths at all. It didn't have anything to do with the fact that whether or not they were like 4.0 GPA students or whether they went to the best colleges or they just had this incredible charisma about them. Like, what he recognized, that it was nothing like that at all. What he saw is that they had this willing trait about them, this ability to show their weaknesses. You see, they didn't have to be the smartest person in the room. They didn't have to see themselves or make themselves the hero of the situation. They realized that they were truly hero makers of the people around them, even though that they were the CEO. Here's how Collins puts it. This is what he said. Great name, by the way, Collins. Here's how he puts it. He said, those who worked with or wrote about the good to great level 5 leaders continually used these words like quiet, humble, modest, reserved, shy, gracious, mild-mannered, self-effacing, understated. He said they did not believe their own clipping. And before Jim Collins, before he stumbled upon this principle, I think Jesus was basically saying the same thing when he said, whoever desires to be great, let him be your servant. You see, here's the thing. Your greatest weakness is your superpower. Your greatest struggle in life, it can become your superpower when you lean into it. When you lean in, when you begin to recognize and see how Jesus can reshape and rework and reimagine what it can look like in the lives of others. When you begin to let yourself go and begin to be others first. When you begin to recognize that really what I need to be doing is to be looking for opportunities to be a servant, like Jesus said, a servant of all. I want you to go ahead and grab your phones, grab your connection cards if you're at home, and actually just stand up with me. I want to walk through a couple of these because I think that God has something specific for each and every one of us in these next steps for this week. Because really, I truly believe that there is something in your life that God is trying to reset. I found that to be true about myself. When my wife said those really harsh words to me, I needed to hear them. Because I think God is trying to reset something in me. Very first one, it's this. Can you just begin to recognize and accept your struggle? Can you begin to recognize? Just pause. See what it is and accept that, yeah, this really is a struggle that I have. Maybe you're like me, you've got a bit of a control thing about it. Maybe you had these great dreams and it seems like they've just been crushed. Can you just recognize it and just accept it first? And then after you do that, this second one is so important. If you're going to do the first one, you have to do the second one. You have to seek out guidance. You have to seek out direction from trustworthy people. You've got to get yourself into community. You've got to surround yourself with people that are going to call out your blind spots, like my wife did. You see, sometimes our blind spots, they're paralyzing us. I just thought I wasn't handling the COVID season well. What I realized is I was disappointed. I was sad. I was hurt. I had great dreams and expectations and visions of what it could be. And then I felt like I had the rug pulled out from under me. So many of us, I think, are in that same place. High school seniors, college graduates. Maybe you find yourself in that same place. Had these same great expectations and dreams of what would be. And it was just ripped out from underneath you. Get yourself into community. Find a group of people that will walk with you, that will call it out in you. And then the last one, look for ways. Look for ways to serve and to elevate others. Maybe begin to live out of a serving posture first. Be others first, like Jesus was. You see, the decision, it really is yours. Like, you don't have to do this. You can continue to just go on the path you are going. You can continue to do the same things that brought you to where you are right now. But I really think that God hit this reset button for us to make a change, to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror and see that there is something more, that there is a new direction, to begin to choose to serve others, to choose to lean into your weaknesses, and really to begin to help others see that they can have a brighter future, more hope, and bring more light into places where maybe it feels so dark. You have the opportunity. We all have the opportunity. So would you take it seriously this week? Would you lean in? Would you ask the hard questions? Would you ask the people around you to call out your blind spots? Because when we do that, man, we will all grow. Let's pray. God, today I know that we all have struggles. We all have areas of our life and these weaknesses that maybe we feel like we can't overcome. And honestly, God, we probably can't on our own. So I want to ask you right now, would you just lean into God this week in a way that you've never leaned into Him before? And Jesus, when we do this, Would you lift us up? Would you lift us up to begin to see a brighter hope, a brighter future? Would you begin to help us to put others first, to lay down ourselves so that we can raise others up and really lean in and accept that our struggle really can become our superpower? It's in your name we pray.